Chapter 15. London, Satan's Throne. I am a god. In the seat of God I have seated myself, in the heart of the open sea. Ezekiel 28:2. Just as all the nations of the earth are likened to symbolic trees planted in the Garden of Eden, Jehovah's forest of tree-like nations has an appointed overseer, as did Eden originally. The overseer of nations in Ezekiel's prophecy is the king of Tyre, of whom Ezekiel 28:13 and 14 says, "In Eden, the garden of God, you prove to be. You are the anointed cherub that is covering." While it is evident that Jehovah was referring to Satan the devil before his rebellion, why does God link the king of Tyre with the anointed cherub of Eden? The answer has to do with the fact that the real rulers of our world are not human at all. Jesus and his enlightened apostles revealed that wicked spirits in heavenly places are the real authorities and principalities that dominate this wicked system of things. It is only logical, then, that any judgment against the spirit rulers in the invisible realm would also become manifest upon the earthly powers under their control. That is why Jehovah's judicial decision expressed against the king of Tyre is intertwined with the judgment against the evil spirit creature now known as Satan the devil. But what relevance could this ancient prophecy possibly have today? Although God's judgments against the maritime empire of Tyre were fulfilled long ago, the prophecies apply in amazing detail to the British Empire and the modern city of London in particular. Since the devil and his demons were not judged at the time that Babylon or Alexander the Great destroyed Tyre, it is apparent that the prophecies against Tyre have a much grander fulfillment related to Jehovah's forthcoming judgments against the entire wicked system of things, both heavenly and earthly. In the 27th chapter of Ezekiel, the prophet is commanded to compose a dirge for the passing of Tyre. The opening words of the dirge say of Tyre, "O you who are dwelling at the entrances of the sea, the tradeswoman of the peoples for many lands." The Phoenician coastal city of Tyre is recorded in history as dominating the Mediterranean Sea with her fleet of merchant ships, even plying the waters of the North and South Atlantic. Yet the description of Tyre as one dwelling at the entrances of the sea applies even more especially to London's British Empire. During the days of the formal empire, she controlled virtually every major waterway in the entire world. This was vital in view of the fact that London's empire was a maritime empire. One of the most important entrances of the sea is the natural sea gate through the Straits of Gibraltar. The Straits of Gibraltar are, of course, the vital entryway connecting the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea. Interestingly, the Phoenicians and Tyrians once held that sea gate too, and for the last several centuries it has been a British-held fortress. Gibraltar was a strategic British asset during both world wars. The Suez Canal is another vital waterway that makes it possible to travel from the Indian Ocean through the Red Sea and into the Mediterranean Sea without looping all the way around Africa. It was particularly vital for British imperial interests to control the Gibraltar and Suez sea gates because that allowed Britain more direct access to her most important colony at that time, India. By 1900, British naval bases were maintained around the world at strategic choke points, which gave London a presence on virtually every major sea lane on the planet. For example, since around 1860, The Royal Navy's Pacific Fleet has been harbored at Esquimalt, British Columbia. On the Atlantic side of the Western Hemisphere, a British naval presence was maintained in Halifax, Nova Scotia, as well as Bermuda and Jamaica and St. Lucia. On the opposite side of the Atlantic, the Royal Navy was based at Gibraltar and Freetown in the African colony of Sierra Leone. From 1814, after wresting control from the Dutch colonists, the British established a naval presence at Cape Town, South Africa, which allowed them to control the shipping lanes around the southern tip of Africa. On the east side of Africa, at the turn of the 20th century, the Royal Navy was harbored at Mombasa, Kenya. Other critical choke points included Aden in Yemen, which was at the entryway of the southern end of the Red Sea, where it joins the Indian Ocean. From bases in Bombay, Ceylon, Singapore, Hong Kong, and Sydney, Britain controlled the vital waterways of the Indian subcontinent and the entire Orient, as well as the sea lanes of the countless islands of the South Pacific. Unquestionably, Great Britain once sat at the entrances of the sea, and to a great extent, it still does. But besides controlling crucial shipping lanes, sea gates, and other vital infrastructure, the Crown maintains a virtual empire composed of dozens of islands scattered across the seven seas of the globe. Anguilla and Barbuda, Bermuda, the Falklands, British Virgin Islands, Jamaica, the Solomon Islands, St. Helena, and the Cayman Islands, to name a few. Of these, the Cayman Islands appear to be the most important, serving as a virtual modern-day pirate cove for offshore drug money laundering, tax evasion, and other illegal operations, which are carried out through the thousands of hedge funds registered there. As of 2007, of the nearly 10,000 hedge funds in the world, over 8,000 are registered to the Cayman Islands. For an island grouping with a total population of less than 60,000, that means that there is one hedge fund for every 7.5 people on the islands. Truly, to whatever extent Tyre may have colonized the Mediterranean region, we may be sure that the prophet's words apply even more so to the far-flung British Empire. In the heart of the vast seas are your territories. Also, Ezekiel 27:15 accurately describes the British maritime system, saying of it, "Many islands were merchants in your employ." Ezekiel appropriately likens the city of Tyre to a ship, what might be called a ship of state. Ezekiel 27:5-6 says, "Out of juniper timbers from Senir, they built for you all the planks. A cedar from Lebanon they took to make a mast for you. Out of the massive trees of Bashan, they made your oars. Your prow they made with ivory and cypress wood from the islands of Kittim." A sailing vessel is an appropriate symbol for the maritime power of the British Isles. Not only because she maintained her far-flung empire by means of an extensive navy and merchant marine, but also because Great Britain was once the world's leading shipbuilder, and not just of warships. At the time of the First World War, British-built merchant ships accounted for a staggering 60% of the tonnage of all the world's ships. And because the Royal Navy once dominated, being larger than the combined navies of the next two contenders, London was able to control merchant shipping globally. Like her Tyrian forerunner, London is aptly likened to a sailing vessel manned by skilled sailors and craftsmen from many lands. That is because Canada, Australia, New Zealand, India, and many other territories in the imperial realm have made significant contributions to the upkeep of the British Empire, especially during times of war. Hence, Ezekiel 27:8-10 is relevant for Tyre's modern incarnation as the British Empire. "The inhabitants of Sidon and Arvad themselves were your rowers for you. Your skilled ones, O Tyre, happened to be in you. They were your sailors, Even old men of Gebal and her skilled ones happen to be in you as caulkers for your seams. All the ships of the sea and their mariners themselves prove to be in you in order to exchange articles of merchandise. Persians and Ludum and men of Put, they happen to be in your military force, your men of war. Shield and helmet they hung up in you. They were the ones that caused your splendor. However, one difficulty that must be overcome for the Bible student concerning the parallel between ancient Tyre and the British Empire is the fact that Great Britain no longer has such a far-reaching, static naval presence. But one of the reasons is that nuclear submarines have reduced the need for land-based control of strategic choke points, of which the United Kingdom maintains a fleet based at Faslane, Scotland. As in the case with its American military partner, at least one of Her Majesty's submarines is prowling beneath the oceans of the earth at any given moment, armed with the most lethal weapons ever devised. Although Great Britain no longer controls maritime commerce to the extent that she did during her glory years, nevertheless, London still dominates the world in significant ways. Contrary to popular myths, the power of the British Empire acquired during the past 300 years has not significantly diminished. London has merely transformed itself into a financial empire, while the United Kingdom itself remains part of the most powerful alliance on earth, the Anglo-American Dyad. Subheading: The Tradeswoman for the Peoples. London certainly fits the description of being the tradeswoman of many lands. In times past, the privately owned British East India Company and the British Merchant Marine and Navy brought in the booty from the far reaches of the empire. While the East India Company no longer exists, many of the world's largest corporations today began years ago as part of London's global trading enterprise. For example, the Bank of England, founded in 1694, is one of the oldest commercial institutions in existence and sits at the center of London's mercantile and financial system. Names like Barclays and the recently defunct Barings Bank are associated with the empire of yesteryear. HSBC, otherwise known as the Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation, was founded in 1865 in order to process the money taken from selling opium to the Chinese peasantry. Headquartered in London, HSBC is now one of the largest financial institutions on the planet, touting itself as the world's local bank. De Beers has a virtual monopoly over diamond production in Africa and was a key component of the empire. Lloyd's of London is the oldest and largest insurer in the world. Wall Street's J.P. Morgan & Company has an Anglo pedigree that extends back to 1838. GlaxoSmithKline originated as a drugstore in London nearly 300 years ago and has grown into the fourth largest pharmaceutical company in the world. These are just a few well-known companies that have roots that reach back to the heyday of Queen Victoria's British Empire and that still presently control vast riches on a global scale. In the modern era, companies associated with the British Empire dominate raw materials and precious metals mining. Companies like Anglo Gold, Ashanti, Lowmin, formerly Low Row, short for London Rhodesia, Anglo-American PLC, and the British Australian companies Rio Tinto Zinc and BHP Billiton are recognized as key components to London's domination of precious metals and raw materials production globally. But London's dominance of the raw materials production is enhanced through trading mere contracts for such materials. As an example of the global reach of the City of London's financial district, until just recently, the international price of gold was fixed twice a day at exactly 10:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. by the office of London's N.M. Rothschild. Furthermore, until recently, futures contracts controlling more than two-thirds of the world's oil were traded on the floor of London's International Petroleum Exchange. It has been estimated that once an oil tanker leaves the Persian Gulf, its cargo may be bought and sold 100 times in the virtual oil markets before ever it reaches its final destination. And because international oil sales are denominated in U.S. dollars, London exerts tremendous control over the value of the so-called petrodollar. Also, the London Metal Exchange is the world's leading trader in non-ferrous metals. On a busy day, the LME may facilitate contracts worth more than $10 billion. While England itself has no raw materials except coal, as of 1997, British and Commonwealth allied firms controlled 60% of the world's annual gold production, amounting to a stake of nearly $15 billion. Furthermore, London-centered groups control fully one-half of all diamond production, 25% of the world's copper, 29% of silver production, and 78% of the mining of the precious metal platinum. Today, London's share is even greater than it was in 1997. Like Tyre, London has also amassed silver and gold in great quantity. The scripture says, "And Tyre proceeded to build a rampart for herself and to pile up silver like dust and gold like the mire of the streets." The ancient prophecy pertaining to Tyre's many trading partners and the numerous articles of exchange that were traded finds an amazing correspondency with the global reach of the city of London. For instance, the 12th verse reads, "Tarshish was your merchant because of the abundance of all sorts of valuable things, for its silver, iron, tin, and lead, your stores were given." The 22nd verse continues, "The traders of Sheba and Rama themselves were your traders, for the finest of all sorts of perfumes and precious stones and gold, your stores were given." In addition to mining, British Petroleum and Dutch Royal Shell are the Crown's flagship oil companies that trade in that precious commodity. And since all international oil contracts are denominated in what are called petrodollars, currency traders and hedge funds control the value of the U.S. dollar. And undoubtedly, ever since the industrial age created an insatiable thirst for petroleum, Anglo-American interests have exerted a strong controlling hand in the affairs of the oil-rich Middle East. Besides controlling much of the Earth's raw materials, a handful of companies hold sway over the most important commodity of all, food. Unilever, for example, headquartered in London and Rotterdam, is one of the oldest and largest food production companies in the world. The interlocking British, Dutch, and Swiss companies are the world's leading merchants in food commodities and constitute a cartel by virtue of owning controlling interest in several giant food processing companies. And just as with metals and petroleum, food commodities contracts are a substantial part of the trading strategies of London's hedge fund managers and brokers. According to Isaiah's prophecy against Sidon, the merchants of Tyre and Sidon enriched themselves off of the harvest of the nations. Isaiah 23:3 says, "And on many waters has been the seed of Sihor, the harvest of the Nile, her revenue, and it came to be the profit of the nations." How true that has been for the traders located in the modern Tyre as well. The British system has become the model for the present global financial system and is designed to extract the wealth of nations, and the prophecies definitely seem to speak to that very reality. Tyre was not even a nation in and of itself, but it was merely an island city on the Phoenician coast, even as Isaiah 23:7 acknowledges, saying, "Is this your city that was exultant from days of long ago, from her early times? Her fleet used to bring her far away to reside as an alien. In the same way, London surpasses the importance of even the nations of the United Kingdom. For that matter, metropolitan London is not even the real London. The 1 mile square financial district in the heart of London, called the City of London, or sometimes simply the City, is the actual nexus of today's global financial system. The city even has its own mayor, who carries the title of the Right Honorable Lord Mayor of the City of London. Due to the rapid growth of the financial industry in recent years, the City of London has spilled over into Canary Wharf. Whereas in the past, commerce between peoples and nations depended upon either overland trade routes